Welcome to another episode of Reboot America. I'm Chintza Koshy, and I'm here with my good friend David Smith. How are you, David?
Doing well. Had a couple days off work. Going to get back to it tomorrow, and now we're going to do some recording. So I guess you could say productive time, right?
Well, we try to be productive. I don't know whether we are succeeding or not, but right. We certainly try. I want to kind of go back to episode 2 when we talked about the electoral dilemma that the GOP is facing. And just to make it brief, polls indicate that about a quarter of GOP voters would never vote for Donald Trump. And then another quarter would only vote for Trump. No matter who the nominee is, the party stands to lose about a quarter of its voters. At the end of that episode, I asked a question. Let's run that clip, then let's see if maybe now we have an answer. I want to end this episode by asking you one final question. Is there anything that the GOP could have done to avoid the situation?
I don't know what that would be. I don't know what that would be. That's a good question. That's a really great question. That may be the proverbial $64,000 question, so to speak. That's a great question. I don't know the answer to it.
Well, David, do you have an answer, or are you starting to formulate an answer?
Well, as I take a long pause, I think that the reaction I had then is still a very, very real reaction. Ooh, huh, wow. I have some thoughts on it, and we've certainly discussed it a lot. I'm pausing and I'm dancing because how can the current structure, the current Republican organization, have done anything different? I don't know that it could.
As far as I'm concerned, and this is a conclusion that I've discussed many times, I've even mentioned in some of our previous episodes, I just don't think that the Republican Party is a serious political organization. Now, what do I mean by serious? I mean political organization that is designed to be an opposition to the Democrat Party. I think that the GOP has sort of transformed itself into a receptacle. If you don't want to vote Democrat, you vote Republican. And that's basically what the Republican Party is. Because if it were a serious political organization, I don't think that Donald Trump could have ever been able to come in and get the nomination. I don't believe that people like Vivek could now come in, if we are to believe the polls. Without Trump in the race, Vivek is neck and neck with DeSantis. So I think that's the fundamental problem, that the GOP is not a serious political force. It's not a serious political organization. Do you agree with that or disagree?
Based on couching it that way, the serious opposition to the Democratic Party, I can agree with that. Now, I think that the idea of serious opposition to the Democratic Party, maybe it's just getting hung up on terminology, semantics. But if we're talking about what a serious political organization is going to look like, I think that it needs to be more centric to and more geared on, okay, what are we actually here to do? What are we actually here to accomplish? What is our agenda? You know, what is it that the Republican Party actually stands for? Okay, if we're going to talk about transforming the Republican Party, the Republican system, apparatus, whatever organization, into a serious political force, then that has to entail, okay, what are we as a country? What are the policies that are in place now? And what are we saying needs to be in place? And how do we get from here to there? It's not just opposing what the Democrats are doing.
Okay, well, so what you're saying is be an alternative. It's not straight, whatever the Democrats support, we're going to oppose. That's not what I'm talking about when I'm talking about an opposition force.
I just wanted to make sure that I was not hearing something different. Now we're basically speaking the same language. And that, you know, this is what the purpose of this episode is to go down the line of how do you transform the GOP into a serious political organization? So now that we've got that kind of out there, how could the GOP have avoided the situation with, you know, 25% only Trump, 25% never Trump. I think that when he came down the escalator and made the announcement, I'm running for president, I think that the RNC chairman should have been in a position to sit down with him and say, now, we know that you've had your dalliances with the Reform Party, with other stuff previously. Here's how it's going to be. If you're going to have ballot access, if you're going to have access to all of our activists, all of our mechanisms, everything, if you're going to run as a Republican, you're going to play team ball.
Yes.
Sign a pledge now at the outset, and anytime that you're asked about it, confirm verbally that, yes, I will vote for it. I will support the eventual nominee. If I'm not the nominee, I will support the eventual nominee. And also, I will participate in debates.
I do like the idea of having them sign a pledge right from the outset.
Oh, absolutely.
If they're not willing to do that, then that tells you that that person is coming into the party to serve his own interest. He's not going to be a team player, and you don't want that person.
If you refuse to operate under whatever party's rules or structure or whatever, if you sit down with the baby zebras party, I always use baby zebras as a silly reference. If you sit down with the baby zebras party, if you say to them, no, I'm not going to go with what you say, then baby zebra party can either decide, okay, are we going to allow this clown to operate under our banner head? Are we going to give him ballot access if they have primaries or whatever? Or they say, well, you know what, Mr. Doe, good luck to you. We'll see you in November. You have to, as a political party, be able to say, if you're going to try to put your name on the ballot, here are the two things you have to agree to. You have to agree to endorse the or an eventual nominee. And then secondly, you're going to have to agree to debates.
I like the idea of the pledge right from the outset, because what I'm talking about is going forward, preventing people like Donald Trump, like Vivek, essentially taking over the party or at least disrupt the party. There has to be some discipline. And the only way you prevent that is if you screen out the people who are coming in because, I don't know, they want to make a name for themselves. They have a book to sell. They have a show to sell. Whatever it may be, but they're not people who are interested in pursuing or contributing to the pursuit of a political vision. So how do you prevent that as a political organization? I think the pledge is one thing. I like what you said about the debates, that if you don't participate in the debates, that you don't get the nomination. Now, whenever I brought these ideas up with some of my other friends, their response has always been, well, but he shouldn't be forced to support someone who he doesn't believe in, or he shouldn't be forced to participate in debates.
Okay, fantastic. We'll see you in November. There are laws in place that if you can get on the ballot on your own, by whatever means, whatever, if you go form your own third party, Ross Perot, or whether you go independent and you pay a fee to get your name on the ballot in all 50 states and territories or whatever, fine, fantastic. That's your way of doing it. We are the Republican Party. If you can operate within this system, within our rules, fantastic. If you choose not to, we'll see you in November. Many best wishes to you. But you're not going to, A, have all of our Iowa state fairs and all of the focus on Iowa and all the free media from Iowa stuff. You're not going to have all of the free media that comes from being a major party candidate. There's a whole bunch of ancillary structure within the Republican movement, organization, whatever. CPAC, you've got a bunch of social media and new media outlets. So if you want to be a major party Republican nominee and have access to all of this stuff, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that by the fact that you are a Republican candidate.
Absolutely. If you run as a candidate of one of the two major parties, yes, of course, you will have the kind of media and the kind of exposure that no third party gets.
It's credibility.
And credibility.
Just
exactly.
By association, it's credibility.
And you will have a certain percentage of voters who are just voting because you have that little R after your name or your little D after that name.
Correct.
So there is a lot of benefit. I guess the focus is, how can the party prevent the disaster that we're seeing today in the GOP? And let's not try to minimize this. the GOP is facing a disaster.
Yeah.
Now, I know a lot of people think, well, if we just nominate Ron DeSantis, look, Ron DeSantis has impressed me greatly. I think he's a great candidate. But let's not forget, you have about 20-25% that if they don't see Trump as the nominee, they're not going to vote. So where are you going to make it up?
Well, when you have 25% who refuse to vote for Trump for various reasons, and when you've got 50% from that poll that you were quoting that are saying, well, we're considering Trump plus others, you're talking about 75% that can sway it to any of those candidates. That 75% can literally pull Burgum or whatever his name is from North Dakota out of obscurity and make him the next president of the United States of America. If you're not going to give every single one of those candidates an opportunity to stand up there on that debate stage, participate, to get onto the debate stage, if you don't qualify, that's another issue. If you don't have the votes, if you don't have the financial support, that's another issue. But if you get on that debate stage, you should be able to address the front runner, his or her record.
What is the purpose of the primary, theoretically? Is for GOP voters to choose the best candidate to go into the general election. That's the theory behind primaries. Now, if that's not what we're doing, then I don't know why have primaries. One of the best vehicles, I think is the best vehicle for different candidates to sort of ask the question in each other in a way to kind of see them all on the same stage and see how they address the questions. It's the debate. Especially the front runner refuses to debate, then the entire exercise is just a waste of time.
You know, we saw the perfect example of this in the Democratic debates last time around, where you had the media just fawning over and trying to hand as much credibility as they could to Kamala Harris, then senator from California. And you had, help me out with her name.
Tulsi
Gabbard. God, I always forget Tulsi's name. Kamala was done. She was finished. The only reason that she still has a career is Joe Biden said, I'm going to give it to someone with black skin and boobs. That's it. She's finished after Tulsi Gabbard.
I think that's a great example because Kamala Harris came in with, like you said, the media loved her, tried to push her in every which way. The donors, especially in Silicon Valley and some of the others, really, really liked her and were trying to push her. And then she went into the debate. She ran into the brick wall called Tulsi Gabbard. And that was the end of that. So it's very important that candidate, especially the front runner, participates in the debate. And the idea that the Republican Party, the RNC, is allowing Donald Trump to continue to seek party's nomination when he has refused to sign the pledge, refused to debate, I think this is political malpractice.
Well, I mean, can you imagine if the Democrats had put every effort that they could behind Kamala Harris and had stunted Tulsi and said, well, you can't get on the debate stage because you don't have the percentage or you don't have the dollars.
What if Kamala had refused to debate?
Right. If she just really knew that she was that awful and just refused to go up there. And then she gets on the ballot as the Democratic nominee. We saw this with Hillary Clinton in 2016. You can repulse enough votes to hand the election to your opponent.
Another mechanism, and this is something we actually talked about back in 2016, even though I was a very big supporter of Trump in 2016. So I'm not going to walk away from that. But I can see that a political party, a serious political party, would have a rule in place to say that if you want to seek the presidential nomination, the top job probably in the world, you should have run as a Republican and won statewide. And if you have not done that, then you cannot seek the nomination. I think you agree with that,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. I think I said it.
That's where I got the idea from.
You know, that can be senator, that can be governor, that could be attorney general.
As Secretary of State, it doesn't matter. You have to demonstrate the ability to run and win statewide.
Well, and for a candidate, what it means is you put together a coalition of your fellow, in Trump's case, New Yorkers. You presumably went out and campaigned around your state. I want you to vote for me for statewide commissioner of baby zebras, whatever. And they said, yeah.
I think for Christmas, I'm going to get you a baby zebra stuffed toy.
What? Yeah, exactly. Whatever. I mean, you know, just like I said, it's just a ridiculous thing that, okay, fine.
Yes, I know.
But, you know, essentially what the Electoral College is you're winning statewide vote counts in certain number of states. The electoral vote adds up to that 270, and you're now president of the United States. If you can't win one state, why are we going to go put your name on the ballot to go and compete in 50 states?
Again, we're getting back to the theme, and that is screen out the individuals who are only coming in for their own self-interest. They're not dedicated to promoting the vision of the Republican Party. I mean, look what has been happening with Donald Trump and the issue of abortion. The Republican Party has been a pro-life party since Reagan. And Donald Trump, not too long ago, he was bragging about how he was the most pro-life president that we ever had. But his recent statements indicate that maybe he wasn't so pro-life after all.
He outright criticized the ban or the whatever it was, number of weeks or days, the heartbeat bill of DeSantis in Florida.
He called it a terrible thing. Again, this goes back to what we were saying. You've got to screen this out. The fact that Donald Trump is saying what he's saying about abortion, it doesn't surprise me in the least. It should not surprise anyone who's actually been watching him for the last few years. He has never been dedicated to any cause. I don't care whether it's the pro-life cause or whatever cause. I think it should be pretty clear to everybody. So going back to saying you have to run as a Republican, you have to show that you win statewide, I think that's a way to screen out the people who just aren't serious. And it is a way to transform the Republican Party into a serious political force.
Well, and the basic idea here being, when you have a serious political organization, you're going to be able to, one, elect candidates who are going to be able to walk your agenda down the field, cross the goal line consistently, time after time. I mean, one example I've said many times is, you know, with the number of red states that we have, the Republican Party should have 60 votes in the Senate every waking day of my entire life, because we've got 50 states total. We've easily got 30 states that are red states consistently. And then when you look at an Arkansas and an Alaska that consistently have had, not all the time, but they consistently have had Democratic governors and Democratic senators.
I'm not sure whether the rules that we're talking about would actually impact that, but I do think if you start the process at the very top, and that is with the presidential nomination, which the entire country pays attention to, then I think that will start filtering down to some of these other races. The senators, as you said, once you set the standard at the top level, then I think activists in different states are going to look at their own local races and say, well, wait a second, maybe we should have these rules. Maybe we should have candidates running for Congress. They have to debate their opponents, because right now, and you know, as a former candidate for Congress in the GOP primary, that many of the incumbents, they just don't debate their challengers.
Right. I want to address that very briefly. Pete Sessions never debated me when I ran against him. There were two organizations that I went in front of seeking their endorsement. And the way that they had it set up was that they required their people within their organization to vote 2/3 of eligible voters for one candidate or the other in order for the organization to issue an endorsement. And neither one of them endorsed either of us, which means I denied Pete that threshold 2/3. Pete never showed up for either one of those. If you have that situation where you have a challenger who has their name on the ballot, they are going to be on the ballot. This isn't a hypothetical. This isn't some pedantic who's, you know, going out and waving their fist and calling names. This is an actual, by God, on the ballot candidate. And they're challenging an elected official. And you have an electorate that thinks that this congressman is the most conservative thing in the world. When you've got the ability as an elected official to portray yourself and your supporters portraying this person as being the most conservative or the most whatever, when you actually talk about record, what you voted for, and people see that, oh, wow, they did this, they didn't do that, oh, and they actually see that record. One, that's accountability. And That's what these elected officials need more than anything, is they need to be able to know that they are going to come back. Hey, congratulations, you're our elected congressman, president, whatever, from wherever. You're now going to have to come back to us. And you're going to have to answer questions about your record as the XYZ elected official. That would be huge, because they're going to actually have to debate somebody. And, you know, if we had a serious Republican Party, one, Trump would have had to have pledged to those two things from the beginning.
If we had a serious political party, there would have never been a Trump, because just the rule that you have to win statewide would not have allowed him to run in 2016. Now, like you said, maybe he would have gone for senator. I don't think so.
In New York, he wouldn't have been elected. I mean, he would have had to have moved to Florida, changed his residency to Florida to have had a chance.
Exactly. He would have had to go to Florida, because the other residence where he spends his summer is in New Jersey. So no, I don't think he would have been elected in New Jersey. I mean, obviously, transforming the GOP into a serious political force, a serious opposition or alternative, whatever you want to call it. I mean, this is a topic that we're not going to be able to address in just one episode, right,
oh,
David?
Oh, agreed. Absolutely.
I think tonight, by putting down three rules for anyone who wants to seek the GOP presidential nomination, you must sign a pledge to support the eventual nominee right from the outset. You must participate in the primary debates. And number three, you must have won statewide as a Republican. I think that those three simple rules will start the process of turning the GOP into a serious organization. I know we're repeating the word serious a lot, but I think it needs to be emphasized, because what is happening right now, it's an absolute clown show. It makes the Democrats look competent. I don't know if you agree with that, but that's how I feel.
Well, there's a lot that makes the Democrats look competent. And the fact that we don't have our stuff together contributes to that.
This is going to be a long process. Party has been sort of wandering around aimlessly for decades now. And it's going to take, it's going to take leadership, and it's going to take a lot of time to kind of get the act together.
Those three that you listed are three very good rules. I think that the typical would-be Republican voter, how about that? The typical would-be Republican voter is basically in line with those three ideas. Now, would they be in a Trump era? Would they be on board with that pertaining to specifically Donald Trump? Probably not. You'd probably get a lot of pushback and opposition to that right now.
I think when Trump is off the stage, and I think this is going to be his last rodeo since we're here in Texas, I mean, I can't imagine him still being around another 4 years. I think that once he's off the stage, then there would be an opportunity to sort of reform the party and just get some discipline here, guys. I know everybody talks about freedom. Look, freedom doesn't mean you get to do whatever you want, whenever you want. You can choose to play football or not, but once you choose to play football, then you have to follow the rules of the game. You can choose to seek the GOP presidential nomination or not, but if you choose to seek it, then you have to abide by the rules. And I think these are simple rules that would go a long way to keep the carnival barkers, the unserious people, off the GOP ballot. This is just the beginning. This is going to be a long conversation. And obviously, some of the other issues, it's not just a question of screening people out. I think that will be a step in the right direction. But there's also other players in the Republican Party that we're going to have to address at some point. And what I'm referring to is the donor class.
Yes.
And the consultant class. Now, we kind of touched on the consultants a little bit in some of the previous episode, but I think we need to go a little bit more in depth. And the donors. I understand you need donors, but donors is another area that needs to be addressed. What do you think?
In writing my notes and preparing for this episode, I wrote down four things. The first one was a strategic analysis. What will win? Because at the end of the day, that's got to be a major, if not the one piece, is what's going to win. If you're going to run a candidate who's just a minor candidate in a district that's not going to win, that's one thing. For the presidency, which is what we've primarily talked about, you've got to have a national strategy. What will win? As far as the donors are concerned, they have to be a part of the conversation. Consultants do as well. You got to be able to have them realize, the donors, they have to recognize that they're not 95% of this equation, and the consultants are 4%, and the activists are 1%. You got to have the votes. You got to have the money. You got to have the votes. And you got to have the people who are capable of crafting the strategy, whether it's a congressional race, whether it's the state house majority, or whether it's the president of the United States. These people all have to be a part of the equation, but they all have to recognize they're a piece of the equation. And then last thing in my notes that I wrote down was, there are 4 key words in that question. How do you transform the GOP into a serious political organization? These 4 words: transform, serious, political organization. And I think that those are kind of 4 topics that a lot of this other stuff kind of falls into. I think it's a brilliant question. And I think that those are kind of the 4 key points in that.
I agree. Well, as always, it's great talking to you, David. Until next time.
Thank you. You as well.
And you have a good evening.
Thank you. You as well. Bye-bye.